Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain, where we lift the curtain on politics and theater. You know, two areas a lot of people think don't ever meet, but here they do. As the political analyst for WGN-TV and host of CLTV's Politics Tonight and Broadway in Chicago Backstage on the Comcast Network, we'll touch on everything from national, international, state, and local politics to the artistic side of our city. We're going to feature the hottest shows and theaters because when it comes to theater, New York, watch your back. Chicago gets it right. Plus, we'll look at other social and legal issues of interest to you each week, hoping to spark a little interest, ensure meaning towards the bigger picture, and maybe even spread some knowledge along the way. Get ready, everybody. We're going to raise the curtain. We're looking behind and underneath the scenes. Let's get to it. Well, it's, of course, political season, and I always like to continue our political dialogue on the podcast, and sometimes in different and creative ways. So I came across this author who was creating not just some biography of Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or whatever, but was writing comic books about them, was putting them in different scenarios, was making them something maybe that they're not, but who knows, maybe it's sort of analogous to what they are. I guess we're going to have to find out. Let's have some fun. Joining me now on this podcast is Beth Schaefer. She is the author of actually a whole variety of books, but the ones of concern mostly for us today are about Hillary Clinton, who becomes a private eye, and Donald Trump, who might just become the principal of your school. Hey, Beth, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you.
So I this is just great fun. Let me focus in on that. What led you to decide one day that it was time to write a comic? I should call it a comic book. I mean, but there are comics in there. There's drawings in there. But there's a story that goes along with it about Hillary and Donald.
Well, first of all, I love to satirize politics. My dad was a satirist. He wrote parodies about all sorts of people, authors mostly. So I guess I have some of that in my blood. But the Donald Trump parody, it's that children's book, quote-unquote children's book, just really honestly just hit me, and I can't even remember when the idea came to me or how it came to me, but it did. This was in, I guess, August of last year. And as soon as I had the idea, I found an artist immediately and got the book completed in about 2 weeks' time.
I love it. Well, you know, you mentioned your dad. I actually want to take a step back in our discussion a little bit because you were a little Dickens when you were little, right? Your dad, and I know he passed away a bit ago, but your dad was a professor, a teacher, and the way you kind of got your starting in writing, I think, was sort of in kind of messing with him a little bit. Tell us about that.
Very much so, yes. I was a little bit older, so I was just, I guess it was in my high school years and then into college up until just a few years ago prior to him passing away. I would play practical jokes on him. So, as you said, he was an English teacher, professor, and he would always be home grading big stacks of papers, and so once in a while, maybe once or twice a year, sometimes I would let a couple years pass, I would write a fake student paper. I would create a character, and I would learn what the theme is from my mom, what was the prompt for this assignment, and I would write a fake student paper that would be outrageous with lots of misspelled words and stuff, and I would stick them in a stack. And it was great fun because he never knew when he was going to come across one, and it was.
But did he know when he came across? Did he go, "Ah, this is one of Beth's papers," or did he ever grade one thinking it was real?
He did write up. There was one that I've included. Well, we'll talk about my book in a second with those papers, I imagine.
Right.
But there was one paper that he thought was legit, and he didn't get to the grading point yet. Sorry.
Right.
But he did start marking up the paper itself, making corrections to the spelling errors. So I was really surprised because it was just it was very obviously fake in my mind. It was so outrageous, so far out there, and he did fall for that one.
So you did write a book of these fake papers. Now, I'm going to be candid here. I actually wanted all your books in front of me while I was doing this interview. But I have this woman who works for me, and she's an editor, and I showed her that, and I haven't seen it since. She took that book. She absolutely fell in love with it, and I guess certainly if you are a writer and editor, it's sort of a must-have. But tell me about that book that's filled with those fake papers, because she loved it.
Oh, sure. Well, that's so nice. Well, may I briefly describe how the idea came to
me? Yeah, sure, sure.
Okay. It came to me in a dream just a few months after my father died. I literally had a dream in which he spoke to me, this dream version of him, of course, and I woke up, and the second I opened my eyes, I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to write a book of fake student papers, and I'm going to start start a publishing company, and I just got on that. I got my company started and started writing fake student papers. See, I'd been lamenting the fact that when my dad was gone, of course, I couldn't play this joke anymore on him. And so I kept it alive, and it all came from this dream I had.
And so there it was. By the way, you've written so many books. And another one, which I kind of personally took a taking to, you wrote a sort of a New Yorker parody, if you will, based on New Yorker magazine, and sort of it explores what if Jon Stewart were president.
Yes, and what I've encountered there is some people love it and some people hate it.
Yeah, well, I loved it.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, no. Some people love it and some people hate it.
Why do they hate it? What's the hate thing?
It's a little raunchy, wouldn't you say?
Bother me, but that's me. Okay.
Then we've got the sexting scandal of Petraeus and Paula in there. So.
Hey, you know, it's life. Things happen in life.
Yeah, so there was one friend of mine, oh my God, I have to say former friend of mine, who found a little bit too risque.
Oh, really? And he cut off the friendship? That was it? Or she cut off the friendship?
It made her very uncomfortable.
Really?
Yes, it did. It did.
She sounds like the female Donald Trump. She can't take a joke, my God.
And then this is kind of funny, but I've promised that I would not say his name. It's so tempting. But when I finished writing this story, the final version, I gave it to a rather well-known founder of a certain very famous funny publication. This particular person, you know, I was hoping this person would maybe endorse it, wrote back telling me to scrap it, to throw it away, that it was terrible and that it broke every single rule in satirical writing.
Which was all you needed to hear to forge ahead. That's it. We're moving on.
Yeah.
Good for you. Well, hey, listen, we don't know if anyone's going to actually listen to this part. Who was it? No,
oh,
don't tell
oh,
me. Don't.
Oh, 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 God, I can't.
Oh, all right.
I really can't. I could be sued.
You know what? Live dangerously, Beth. You got to live dangerously.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I'm totally kidding. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. All right, don't do it. No, I'm going to move you on, because I don't even want that to happen. I would never do that. I'm just having fun with you. So okay. So let's get to the political books of the day, because this is Clinton and Trump season, and so amazing it's a smart time to do that. So let's talk about Donald first. You make him the principal of a school. He starts deporting the second graders, you know. Tell me about that. Tell me about how you came up with the theory or the plot line, I should say, as opposed to, you know, making Donald Trump a businessman or somebody who is running for president. I mean, that's not what you did.
No, because I wanted it to be a children's book with silly cartoons that's not actually a children's book, but that looks like one. And I wanted it to be easy reading. I didn't want to do any kind of big, heavy political commentary. I do a little bit more of that in the Jon Stewart book. So I wanted it to be fun and light in a children's book. And then, like I said, I don't exactly remember how the idea came to me, but, you know, poof, it was just there to make him a principal of a school. And I just, you know, it just took off from there.
I love it. So let's talk a little bit about that. What do we, when we read that book, he's principal of a school. Of course, his hair is a little interesting.
It's a weasel.
Yeah, we have a little weasel on his head that when you look closer, you realize, wait, that's a live animal. I think a lot of people might think that anyway. So he starts deporting people. But I mean, he's not Donald Trump. He is Donald Trump. It's that Donald Trump. That's what I love about the book. It's not as though it's somebody named Donald Trump. You've created this character, but it is Donald.
It is Donald, and every single page that he's on, which is most of them, really relates to something in real life with the real Donald that he's done or that he's said or a situation he's been in. So literally every single picture that he is in that book reflects something that was real or that is real.
And in fact, if we look at the book closely, you actually then, it's not like you're just saying, trust me, it was real. You tell us the source. You give us the sourcing of it.
Yes, I incorporate his actual quotes. In fact, all of the dialogue in the book that he speaks are actual words that he said. Once in a while, I will swap a word, like if he's talking about the country, the real Donald Trump mentions the word country and what his statement is. I swap that in the book for school because the school represents the country. And likewise, I swap when he refers to the word president in real life in the book, it's swapped for principal.
So if I'm a Donald Trump fan, if a Donald Trump fan's reading it, are they going to be happy with this book? Are they going to be upset? Are they going to take it with a grain of salt? What's the reaction for your Trump-loving friends who read it?
Well, I hope that they're upset, because I think that would be really fun. I hope that they buy the book first, not knowing that they would be upset reading it, or they might just roll your eyes. It is kind of funny. A very good friend of mine, very good friend, he's a Trump supporter, and I dedicated this book to him, and he thinks it's hilarious. So I think Trump supporters can enjoy it as well.
Well, you have to look at all this stuff lightly. It is election season. And on the Hillary side, so Hillary, you make a private eye. Now, why did you give her sort of a regular job, a flight attendant or something like that? Why did she become a private eye?
Because I love mysteries, and I wanted the readers to be, you know, knock on wood, intrigued to follow this whodunit plot. So I wanted her to be in another leadership role, but not quite as overt as, you know, Trump is as a principal. I wanted it to be really entertaining, and it's just fun. People like reading mysteries, and I could really play that up in the illustrations too. So
now
there's so much more to do with detective than flight attendant, although I kind of like that idea.
So is the mystery in this book, is she trying to solve a murder or maybe a terrorist plot?
No, she is trying to figure out, she's trying to solve a theft, a crime in which Hugh Hefner, his prize hot dog, which he has in his gallery in the Playboy Mansion, has been stolen. And so this is her first assignment as secret agent. And she and her assistant, Macy, who looks remarkably like Marcy from the Charlie Brown cartoon,
right.
And calls Hillary Sir, they go to the Playboy Mansion, and Hugh shows them his gallery, and they see the empty hot dog bun, and then they see condiments splattered all over, and those are the clues. So they track down the suspects per condiment that they've found there on the scene of the crime.
And, of course, we go through some of the possible culprits, right? It could be Bernie Sanders. It could be Elizabeth Warren. All these people are possible.
Yes. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
And
that one just
Trump,
sounds like just Trump a bunch of fun, just a bunch of fun to write.
Oh, it's a blast. It's a blast. And I mean, honestly, I don't think I could have done this without this amazing partnership that I have with this artist. I mean, honestly, 85% of this thing is the amazing illustrations that this designer did for this book.
They look great. And by the way, Hillary kind of comes out a little better than Donald, right? I mean, she's so I'm guessing if we're trying to figure out which way you lean, maybe we can figure it out.
I think you can figure it out. Yeah.
Well, so there's still time to go in this election season. Is your mind turning with any kind of sequels? Are they going to, now we know it's Hillary versus Trump. Are we going to bring them together in a new book?
I would absolutely love to. I mean, that's my problem. And it's coming up with all of these ideas and wanting to just produce them immediately. And I have a great idea for Bernie Sanders parody with the same cartoonist. But I think at this point, there's no point in proceeding with that. I don't know. I really
Yeah, that one's
to.
Over.
So I want to keep writing in this vein of political satire for sure.
Well, you could certainly have Donald and Hillary like in a plot together. I don't, you know, doing some. I mean, a totally different place, but they could be in the same book.
Oh, you just gave me an idea.
There you go.
Vaudeville.
What did I just give you? I'm going to take credit for it. What?
Vaudeville. There'll be vaudeville performers.
That's together. What I was thinking. That's exactly where my head was. Not really.
Oh my god.
So you make it a musical book where you then write lyrics to songs.
Oh my god, that's cool.
And then you'll get sued for using songs you don't have the rights to use, but you don't care because you forge ahead.
Exactly. So I may as well tell you who it was who completely trashed my John Stewart presidency book.
I still say tell me that when we're not on the air.
Okay. Rhymes with Snickers.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry.
All right. Wait a minute. Now everybody who's listening has got to rhyme.
Oh, shoot. I tend to do that. I get myself in trouble.
You've always been, now think about it. You're the same person who was writing fake papers. So this is part of who you are.
Yes, unfortunately.
You're just a little troublemaker. Now, here's the thing. I happen to know you have a child. Is is this how you're teaching him to be?
Yes, it is. His teacher, who's very nice, she has some real problems because my son is very, very goofy, a class clown. But unlike me, like all the kids love him. I was a class clown that people thought I was just a big dork. But he's very charming, and he turns everything into a joke, and that's my bad influence.
I love it. I can't wait to. I've not met him, but one day I can only imagine he'll grow up to be. Listen, he right. We always want kids to be better than us, so he's going to take things even to a whole new level than you've taken them.
I hope so.
Me too. So, if people want to check this out, they can go to a website. Tell them what it is.
Sure. It's the website for my publishing company, which is Books on a Whim.
Right, booksonawhim.com.
Right.
And you can see all sorts of books there. And I, by the way, not just the Clinton and Trump books. Can we find all of these books we're talking about available there?
Yeah, absolutely. There's the Grade A Papers book, which was my first book, the one that I wrote, my very first book, the one I told you about, of the fake student papers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a sequel coming out soon. That one's almost done. It has some nice contributors in there, too. But that's a whole other book.
You would tell us who they are, but you'd have to kill us. Well, Beth Shaver, I just think what you did is so much fun, and it's what a great way to have fun with the election season. If you do write that vaudeville book, now dedicate it to me. That's all I'm asking.
I'm going to. I really am. I'm going to. Thank you. I love this idea.
Oh, my pleasure. And we verified it right here on the podcast. This is great. The website is booksonawhim.com. Whim is W-H-I-M, booksonawhim.com. And do you mind if people want to send you an email or something? It's Beth at booksonawhim.com,
right? Oh, no,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because you're very fun to talk to and very fun to work with. And congratulations. This is just great stuff. And thanks for putting a fun spin to election season.
Thank you so much, Paul. It was really fun.
All right, Beth Shaver, thanks for being with me. Good luck on the next book.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
One of my clear passions in life are our pets, dogs, cats. Just they are our soulmates in many ways. They are the best friends we will ever have. They are clearly family members. If you have a pet, you know exactly what I'm talking about, and you do agree with me. If you don't have a pet, maybe sometimes you think people like me are crazy because we're so dedicated to the pets we have, but they make such a difference in our lives. For me, there's a very special place in the city where I got my first dog, at least as an adult, my first dog, and who was a rescue. And I always think it's very important to rescue animals as well. Breeders, you know, are fine, but rescuing a dog is truly saving a life. And many years ago, I happened to, I needed some gas, and I stopped at the Shell station in Ontario, and they were changing shifts, and it's a long story. And I just happened to walk across the street into the Anti-Cruelty Society. Long story short, there I met the love of my life. He was a little miniature schnauzer named Mertz, and he stayed with me for the next 15 years and truly was one of the most important pets I've ever had. And I owe Anti-Cruelty Society my thank you for that. But it's not just my story. Anybody who goes in and adopts a pet at Anti-Cruelty or other shelters for that matter always have very important stories to tell. I wanted you to learn a little bit about the Anti-Cruelty Society. And so joining me now is David Dinger. David, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate it.
Hello, how are you doing?
I am great. So you just heard that little bit of a story, and I think you know how important Anti-Cruelty Society is to me and for all the great work you do. But for folks who aren't familiar with you or say, oh, there's just so many shelters, fill them in on exactly what you guys are doing and why what you do is sort of special in the city.
Well, sure enough, and I'd like to start off by saying, you know, we appreciate that you're grateful to us, but we're grateful to you and everyone else who does adopt the animals that are in our care because that's what we work so hard to do is get them out of here and into homes for the rest of their lives. So deeply appreciated that and all of your generosity over the years.
Sure.
But Anti-Cruelty Society has been around for a long, long time. We're in our 117th year right now. I guess we just passed into our 118th.
Wow.
And, you know, we started off as an agency that was concerned with the working horses in Chicago and child labor at the time, way back in the beginning of the last century, but have evolved now into, you know, the premier organization in town that deals with the problems that have been created by human beings for companion animals, the dogs and cats, and even other small mammals that do bring so much to our lives.
Yeah, I mean, am I right? I know, and I know so many people who are there. I mean, there are days you come to work and somebody has—I just want to just hurt them. Somebody has dropped a load of kittens off, or they've dropped a dog at your door, right? I mean, this kind of stuff happens.
It certainly does. Thankfully, I think it happens less and less with each passing year. I think the efforts of our education staff are taking hold, and society has been changing. We're seeing that the neutering rates for companion animals are rising with each passing year. The numbers of animals that we've seen coming into the into this facility and into the system in Chicago has been steadily dropping over the last few years. So we're finally gaining the upper hand.
Which is a good thing. You know, I also want to talk about there's places that are no-kill shelters and places that are that do have to euthanize and stuff. And I actually think even places that say they're no-kill, I'm not quite sure that's exactly accurate, because I think every place, unfortunately, has to take certain steps. But talk to me about the necessity. I mean, the truth is you don't want to put any animal to sleep, but there are some it's difficult to make any other choice.
Well, certainly. You know, agencies that are working with animals, you know, every one of them is well motivated. I think it's easy to say.
You can't be in this business. Yeah, right. You can't do what you do and not love animals.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is a fact of life that there are still enough problems that the issue of euthanasia is not ready to go away at this point. Now, agencies that don't practice euthanasia, you know, good for them. They're doing good work. But the reality is that when open admission agencies like Anti-Cruelty Society open our doors for the day, we're not always entirely sure what's going to be showing up at the door. And each day we're faced with the potential, at least, of you know, real challenges with the animals that are coming in. You know, other agencies do have an opportunity by virtue of how they've established themselves to pick and choose, you know, who they admit into the facility. But animal control agencies and open admission shelters, we haven't set ourselves up for that luxury.
And how do you make sure? The other thing that always scares me, how can you be sure that people coming in to adopt a pet, that they're good people, that they should adopt a pet? And I shouldn't say, it doesn't mean they're not good people, they're bad people. There are some people who, for whatever reason, maybe shouldn't have a pet, you know, they're gone all day long and they just don't think about it. And that kind of, or, you know, there's the kind of people that give rabbits to people on Easter. They're not thinking ahead. I mean, what do you do to make sure it's the right match?
Sure. Our efforts are geared. I mean, we'd like to assume that the people who are motivated enough to come to the animal shelter have thought this process out, at least in a cursory fashion. But our job then is to sit down and make sure people do have as firm an understanding as we can give them about what they're going to face over the near-term future, and hopefully what they're going to get from it as well, so that they can do the cost and benefit analysis and make sure that they're making the right choice.
But you do put people, if somebody comes in, they don't just say, I'll take that dog, and out the door they go.
No, it's a sit-down process. Again, we have information to impart, both about the history of the animals that are in our care, as well as the work that we've put into them, because it takes an awful lot of effort to get many of these animals ready to go into new homes, medically and behaviorally. And so we want to bring people up to speed on all of that. So as far as we can inform people, we want to make sure that they understand precisely, because these aren't commodities. They're creatures. They're living, breathing creatures. They have personalities. They have quirks. Some of them have bigger quirks than others. But they all have the opportunity to give back such a quantity of reward for what we put into them, but we need people to understand up front that each and every one of them is just not a cookie cutout of every other one that's here. We want people to make the choice that the animal that they're taking home is the right one that fits into their expectations and circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, look, there are some dogs that aren't good with little kids. There are some dogs that aren't good with other dogs in the house, right? I mean, so those are the kind of questions people have to, you know, it's easy enough to go, oh, we want a second dog, but not every dog wants to be the second dog.
Yep. And for instance, you know, we always encourage people to bring their children as part of the process. If you have dogs in the house, it doesn't work so well with cats. But if you have dogs in the house, it's a great idea to bring them along. And we have staff here well versed in the process of, you know, meeting animals for the first time and giving people the information that they need to make that process work for everybody instead of just throwing caution to the winds.
Now, the wonderful thing is you guys are growing. You're located, and by the way, I don't know, but I think maybe everybody doesn't know this, but the truth is if you are in front of the facility at Grand and LaSalle, right?
Yep.
The front of the building looks like a puppy face. That's the design.
That was originally the design. We wanted a lot of window space so that people could look inside. I mean, it wasn't an accident. We want people to look inside and lock eyes with some of these animals and then take the next step of walking in the door and spend some time with them.
But as I said, the front of the building actually kind of takes the shape of a puppy face. So you are growing and you're expanding. So tell our listeners a little bit about what is in the agenda and plans for, you know, where things are and how they're going.
Sure. We, we're an old organization, and over the course of time, we've had several spurts of building and rebuilding. The last time we had really major construction here at the facility was 1989, and since then, we've had hundreds of thousands of dogs and cats and other small creatures come through our doors. The level of disinfection and care and the number of animals that come through here, it's really hard on the physical plant that we have to operate in. And so a few years back, we embarked on a rebuilding program in order to get ready for the challenges that the changing face of animal welfare is presenting to us, because they're different than they were 30 years ago, 25 years ago, and to let the next generation have a facility that's modern, up to date, and meets the needs that we're going to be facing in the years to come. So we're actually winding down in the next couple of weeks on a 5-year construction project that has rebuilt our adoption, much of our adoption center, our low-income and low-cost veterinary clinic has been completely rebuilt. Our intake department is new, and right now we're in the process of resurfacing and refinishing our courtyard so that we can have year-round access to it instead of just the nice months.
Which is just so perfect. There's also events that you do. And again, people may listen to this at any time. So tell me about some of the Bark in the Park. There's just some great events that happen each year, and people can go on the website and check it out. But talk about some of the great events that you guys sponsor.
Okay, Bark in the Park. Everybody just missed, so you'll have to cry into your coffee on that one.
They'll get it next year.
A whole year before you can do it. But yes, thousands of dogs in the park, and we've moved locations this year to just south of Soldier Field in a beautiful, beautiful, idyllic setting. So we have thousands of dogs show up with families. We have activities for dogs, obstacle courses, and dog massage, art projects, puppy paw prints, and things for kids and families to participate in as well.
Go ahead.
We're always interested in involving children in this process, because they are the next generation, and they're going to be the hope that finally makes the problems that we've been working so hard at fixing finally go away if we can reach enough kids and teach them about the value of having these animals in their lives. So kids are always a big part of our process here.
And indeed, by the way, I want to talk about volunteering, because kids, not little kids, but at a certain age, you can come and spend some time and learn some of the responsibilities of working with these animals by giving up your time.
Sure. And in fact, it's one of our areas of programming growth at this point, as we're looking at expanding the kinds of programs that we have for kids. It always surprises people to know that we put our first humane educator on staff here back in the middle of the 1930s, and have offered humane education as a serious part of our program ever since.
Wow. Things are a little, things are a little different now. You mentioned you've been around for all those years. I mean, like I said, people didn't think of their pets, dogs and cats, 100 years ago the way they see them today, right? I mean, and I kind of wonder whether it's even changed in the last 20, 30 years, just the way people regard pets.
Oh, I actually do believe that it has. And I think if you look at the statistics on what people are spending on their animals at this point, and the rise of things like daycare for dogs.
Tell me about it.
Recognize that people are recognizing that they can avoid some of the problems that their parents and grandparents had with the dogs and cats in their care.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of nuts about this stuff. If I go out in the evening, I actually have a babysitter for my dogs, and I think I need therapy.
way, you can get therapy for your dog as well, probably in some locations.
Yeah, that's a good point. Who needs the therapy? Well, because they're just so important. So for, you know, Dave, people that want to be involved, as I said, volunteering the time, but how else can people get involved in the work of the society?
Well, certainly we wouldn't exist without the generosity of the citizens of Chicago, the animal lovers. And so there are lots of donation opportunities, both in terms of money and in supplies. But we do need bodies. We need lots of warm bodies. And in fact, as we're evolving now into dealing with new issues, we're in desperate need of lots more foster homes, both short-term and medium-term, in order to give some of these animals exactly what they need to get over the last hurdles to get into a home. So
now explain what that, when you say foster home, I mean, because to me, if a dog came in as a foster home, I don't think I'd ever let him go. So what exactly does it mean to be a foster parent for a pet?
Well, it does happen, and we call them foster failures when people keep them. But
yeah, right, that's a good thing. It's a good thing.
It's not the object of the program, because we would like them. We would like some turnover. We'd like them to get adopted and have our foster families take yet more animals instead of closing themselves off by becoming adopters all the time. But foster was historically meant for animals that needed care, either medical care, sometimes behavioral, or just time to grow and become large enough and healthy enough to go through the adoption program. But we have some new stuff on the docket right now. In fact, we have what we're calling our foster ambassadors, where we have people take animals that don't have anything wrong with them, either medically, behaviorally, anything, who they've just taken a liking to, and want to get more involved in the end result for them, mm-hmm. and just become ambassadors out on the street, walk these dogs around with vests on that say "Adopt me, come talk to me," and become then a roving adoption program instead of making people come to Grand Ole Nassau.
Wow, this is good. That's a good thing to do. So let me just ask you, for me, I know that my dogs mean so much to me, and in fact, even my human kids know they sometimes come second, but they're okay with that. Well, why is it, do you think? What is it that owning a dog, and some people are cat people, whatever, what is it about having a pet in our lives that that just has the impact that it does? I find it hard to articulate.
Well, I think the core of it is that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you've been through. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood, that you know that they're always there for you. You know, sometimes the spouse or the kids, they recognize that, better stay away from dad today. But your dog's not going to. Your dog's going to be right there, not asking for anything except a pat on the head, an opportunity to, give you a couple of licks. And it is just that moment that you're getting all of your paid back for everything that you put into this, because it just turns your head around. It just makes you understand that this is all about the emotional connection that you have with the world around you.
I think that's right. I mean, you come home after a bad day, you're upset, whatever, and there they are, just they couldn't be happier. They're waiting all day for you to just come home. It's all they want.
All they want.
And hang with you. And if you want to watch TV, they'll lay right next to you and just be with you. And you become their whole world. And I guess maybe that's the reason they become our whole world.
Yep.
It's really beautiful. People that want to check out and learn more about the Anti-Cruelty Society, tell us the website so we can go take a look.
It is www.anticruelty.org.
Simple enough.
And you can see all the adoptable faces, little bio stories, and information about how to adopt, and all the services, that we have available to people that own animals or people that wish to.
If you want to get an animal, go over to Anti-Cruelty Society, check it out, just walk around. In fact, if you walk in saying, I'm just thinking about it, you'll be going home with an animal, I think. But even if not, to support it financially, to be a part of the program, to volunteer your time. Again, we bring these pets into our lives, and I think we have a responsibility to make sure that we treat them well and do everything we can for them. David Dinger, my thanks to you and to Robin Barbieres, to everybody over at Anti-Cruelty Society, who does great stuff. You're making a difference, and I know I appreciate it. I appreciate the animals I've gotten from you.
Well, thank you, Paul. And again, it's worth saying one more time, it is the people who provide support for us and actually give homes to these animals that we have nothing but eternal gratitude to. So thank you.
Indeed. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.